With only three hosts on Friday night, Wendy digs up some laws and changes in California that will help businesses, what we can do in Michigan to mirror some of those changes, and Rob challenges us to think of some better uses for beer advent calendars and what breweries and styles we'd like to see come out. Ken finishes the show talking about how Jim Cook of Boston Beer Company is currently looking toward the future of his brand and how half his portfolio will be non-beer in the future. All this and more on this episode of the Craft Beer News. Welcome, everybody, to the news segment, October 28th, 2022. My name is Ken. Real quick, we will be off the next 2 weeks, November 4th and 11th. We will be back on the 18th with the brewery out of Southern California. So this is your last episode to listen to before we have a little bit of a break. My co-host with me, Rob, what are you drinking?
I am drinking whatever cans that we've had hadn't had in a while, the Galactic Extra Dark from Big Drop Brewing, and still sipping on the Seedlip Grove 42 with Canada Dry Cranberry Ginger Ale.
Wendy, what about you?
I have an ESB from Jamesport Brewing out of Ludington.
That is such a good beer.
It is. I actually think I saved this one for you, and I'm drinking it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I have ranted and raved about that brewery so many times, and it's one of easily my favorite beers that I've had when I was up there. Myself, I had the opportunity to go to GABF a few weeks ago and walked away from one of the exhibitors, Black Sky Brewing, their Caveman Kolsch. With it says Black Sky Brewing and Skinless, so I'm guessing that is the name of a metal band. I don't know for sure. Folks in the chat on YouTube can tell me, yell at me. I mean, it looks like a metal band because you can barely read the actual phrasing. But as always, segment two is the news. There's just a few of us today, so I don't know how long we're going to be taking. Probably not too long, but let's go over some news topics and see what things are, what's happening in the world of craft beer. Wendy.
Well, I was taking a look at porchdrinking.com and I saw that California has signed a couple of laws into existence recently that are supposed to help the craft beer industry in California. AB 2301 allows breweries to self-distribute to restaurants they own within a five-mile radius. And AB 2307 raised the cap on the amount of satellite tap rooms that a brewery can have from 6 to 8 and the amount of tap rooms that they can have a full kitchen from 2 to 4. So I'm just curious what you guys think about those changes.
Okay, AB 2301. I mean, self-distribute to restaurants they own within a five. Okay. For a second there, it sounded a little bit like it didn't make sense, I guess. Like, but restaurants they own within a five-mile radius. I mean,
all I can think about is two parcel units where, like, the brew house is in one spot and, like, a different address than the other address, so it has to... they could technically send it next door.
Kind of like what used to be a Rochester Mill situation? Were they even that close?
No, I believe their licenses made them two separate entities from the beginning.
Yeah, the brew pub and the production facility are two separate entities. They share recipes, but they do not... The production
they can't
facility,
make for each other.
Yeah, the production facility does not make for the brew pub and vice versa.
Okay.
So... the example that they gave in here was Urban Roots Brewing in Sacramento has been forced to use a distributor in Concord, located nearly 70 miles away, to take their beer to their fried chicken restaurant, which is called Bach, which is kind of the reason I wanted to talk about this story anyways, because that's an awesome name.
It's called Bach.
Which is located a mere mile from their actual brewing facility.
Before you continue, fun fact, we actually interviewed Urban Roots Brewing back on episode 196.5. I was in Sacramento, and I got a chance to sit down with the owner, proprietor, and they kind of do like a two owners, one manages the kitchen, one manages the brewery. But continue.
So, but that was the example that they gave. So when I first read it, I was like, well, who is that really benefiting? But I get that definitely makes sense. And I could see that because we've talked about that here with the different licenses and such in Michigan that you would have to separate them, things like that.
What we would see here is that think of the Lincoln Tap that just opened over in Royal Oak from the old Roke. Like, they'll be able to get the beer from the Ferndale Project, but they wouldn't be able to get the beer from Eastern Market Brewing, which is about 12, 13 miles away.
About 12, yeah.
Right.
So I feel like this was made because there was enough breweries that obviously caused a fuss, and this is what the distributors would allow without giving too much of a hassle to them. Or, you know, they would have put a bunch of money behind trying to end it. That's my only theory.
And the second one, I think it definitely makes sense to allow them to have satellite breweries. Though they used Modern Times as one of the examples in the story. And I was like, well, did they open too many too fast? But we don't necessarily know that that's the case.
I think the big comparison here that we would see is Nubco in Michigan, which is Jolly Pumpkin. Which has a lot of satellite tap rooms that they don't necessarily brew at, but they just only serve their own beer. We don't really see that elsewhere in this number of spots.
Well, maybe the Eastern Market, Ferndale Project, and Lincoln Tap, if they were in that situation, they wouldn't be separate entities.
I'm always for, like... things that can always make everybody's life easier and not necessarily harder. So any law, even if it's just like a little bit, like these seem to be like, they seem to be like band-aids on potential issues that were able to get passed without any flack. But obviously I'd love to see a little bit more freedom for them to not be so reliant on the three-tier system when you don't necessarily need to, which, speaking of Ferndale Project and EMBC, obviously they were fighting that here in Michigan with the raise in distro cap from 1,000 to 2,500, and then also removing on-site numbers, which I'm curious now if the Lincoln Tap is considered on-site numbers or not, because it's owned by them but not brewed there.
Right, because, I mean, they do have quite a bit of space to brew there. I actually got a chance to stop in there this past weekend. And obviously when it was Roke, we did the tour back there. And
yes,
there's obviously all that barrelage that's still back there, for sure.
There was a lot of space back there. You could easily open up something, or someone could contract there or something like that. Like, Roke was set up to distro from day one, and obviously, they didn't reach the capacity they wanted to reach, but yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I believe, like I said, with 2301, I mean, especially for an example like Urban Roots, it definitely makes sense. I kind of wonder if, because that's the thing, when you talk about the three-tier system, is there going to be any pushback from the distributor end, where now it's, hey, we're not making money off of this product, and there may be other locations that we're no longer making money off of. So what do we do as a business to increase our revenue and you know, keep our employees, keep beer coming in and out, so that, I mean, obviously there's still going to be beer going in and out of the distributor. That's no question. But when you lose a little, I think as a business, you start to look at it and say, okay, where do I start to make that up?
Yeah, but I don't think the amount of savings that they're doing from having to drive 200 miles and pay for gas and delivery and a person and overhead and stuff. Like, I feel like this was created with both in mind, that the distributors are like, all right, it's only 5 miles, or it's only 5 miles. So anything more, obviously we still get, but this saves them from having to also do the work too. Cause if you're the distro and you're forced to distro someone's tap room and they have to deliver it, or you might lose that customer because they might stop distroing. And I mean, Urban Roots is not a small brewery. They're not big, but they're not small. You know, you don't want to lose that customer either, because they'll go somewhere else. So they'll find some smaller distro who will do it that's closer.
Right.
Or
in reference to 2307, the fieldwork representative said, this way we make the beer our customers want and not the beer distributor wants to sell. So it allows them to be more creative and respond to on-site customer demand. I think that actually goes for both of those bills.
Yeah, I think this is just cutting. Remember when we were talking years ago, this might have even been back in the studio, but we were talking about how the Wisconsin Tavern League was trying to force breweries to sell all beer to distro, including beer they were selling in-house. And there comes a point in time where it's because, well, Wendy's laughing, and I get it. It's because they're you. How do you compete against a $4 pint or a $5 pint when you have to charge $7? And that's their mentality. But in the same token, what's stopping them from opening up their own brewery and brewing their own beer? So I think that this is just kind of a way to, one, lower carbon footprint, lower costs, lower everything, to where everyone is happy. It's not really costing these distributors money, because now they don't have to pay 200, you know, a 200 mile round trip for this beer. They only have to pay for, you know, the other beer that they're distributing to those sites.
Especially with their gas prices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Understandable. Yeah. Okay. I'll accept it.
Yeah, I think this is one of those where they're not going to get pushback, because the brewer or the distributor is not going to lose any money. The brewery is going to do good. It's going to make it's making everyone happy. Less work for the distributor, yeah. Less cost for the distributor, and more availability for the producer.
Right.
Sounds good. Rob, what's your article?
Oh, man. All right. So, this holiday season, Stone Brewing is putting out their third annual celebration in a box. It basically is what they're referred to as a case of holiday cheer, which is going to include 12 individual beers spanning between some favorites, some bestsellers, and some never-before-seen beers. It is basically called 12 Days of IPA. And as from being from Stone, I don't know why anyone else would be surprised that it's IPAs, because they make a lot of them. Basically, the holiday pack is going to have a wide range, I will say a decent range of ABVs, ranging from 6.9 to 10.1. They are going to have some of the beers that are going to be in there include some of the ones that we see on the shelves, being the Delicious Citrus, the Ruination. They're going to have the Peak Conditions Hazy Double. There's going to be a Japanese Green Tea IPA, which I'm kind of intrigued, but we'll see. And hopefully, if that's something that can be separated, I may want to try that one. They're going to have their 26th anniversary triple IPA. A few of the other ones that we already know, like Fear Movie Lions, which is one that's been on the shelves. And then a Scorpion Bowl IPA, which I'm kind of curious. I feel like that's going to have some sort of pepper in it, but it only clocks in at 7.5. The strongest one actually is the Japanese Green Tea at 10.1. The 26th anniversary is at 9.7, and the Delicious Double is at 9.4. And it just pretty much goes down from there. Obviously, with, you know, my not wanting to talk about IPAs, but I found this article that you end up talking about IPAs, that, you know, I would love to see some other type of holiday cheer box. Obviously, for us here in Michigan, we do have Rochester Mills and their 12 Days of Christmas, which basically is mostly all stouts. But I'm curious from you two to give me a brewery and a style you would prefer to see 12 Days of. And I'm going to go to Ken because I feel like Wendy is going to say Troves.
Well, she probably wasn't, but now she is. For me,
planting the seed.
a brewery and a style. Can I get a brewery? I'd want someone that is like, honestly, Old Nation. Or you know
what? Is it possible to have, like, I'm already changing my mind.
I already have my answer. I'm just going to cut you off. Sorry.
Okay, go for it.
I would say this is my show, but, you know, it's our show. And I want to make sure that you hear that I'm cutting you off. So, not Old Nation, Wolverine. I want 12 Days of Lagers.
Damn, that's a good one.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I basically won better on draft. The prize.
Oh, my God. That is like, for like the different, just the different versions of Massacre that they do.
No, I don't want 12 Days of Massacre. Jesus. I have a 5-year-old Massacre right behind me. But no, I want 12 Days of Lagers. I want different lagers. I want just lager me. That's it.
Damn, that is a good one. I like that. I couldn't there anything I even try to come up with, because I mean I'm like thinking about this even on the spot. I wrote this but was not thinking of the answer because I wanted to kind of be like improv with it, and I don't feel like I'd even come up with anything that would even come close.
I was gonna go with Old Nation and like German style beers and
oh
like,
my gosh, I was just gonna say, can we talk about that? The fact that they brought all German beers to Beer Fest, that was flipping amazing.
Yeah, Old Nation brought zero IPAs to the Fall Beer Fest.
Zero.
Oh my God.
I'm known for IPAs. Yeah, we got other skills to show off. It was fucking amazing. I loved it. And that. What Rubicon was so good.
I see that is now being distroed in cans. So I'm kind of looking forward to
trying it. It's delicious.
Not a doubt. So what's your answer, Wendy?
I don't know that I have one because I like so many different styles of beer. I was thinking Old Nation when you mentioned it, because, you know, like Nick, I also do the Costco Advent calendar, which is all German style beers. And I've actually, it was the first time I'd ever had a Stein beer, which is a stone beer. And I learned about the style. So I thought that was really awesome. But I don't know. I would love if, like, I'm trying to think of like one brewery that does amazing on just one style, but there's a lot of them, like City Built. If they came up with a holiday cheer pack, it would have to have multiple styles because they're very well rounded. I like it. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's tough. So obviously, with IPAs, you can obviously because Stone is able to do that because they're able to diversify with the different types of IPAs you can come up with. When you're talking about something like, you know, German style beers, a stout, a porter, a saison. Well, a saison you can go all nuts on. Just pick a fruit, just throw it in there.
Brewery Faison in Detroit, man, they could do a Saison pack that would be amazing because they got some really amazing Saisons.
I thought you were going to say Jolly Pumpkin.
No. I mean, yeah, no. They would have a pretty good variety of sours, but.
See, that's another one that you could do a lot of is sours. I mean, I would love to see, you know, a different variety of, you know, going to Ken's wheelhouse and going to Browns or Alts. But it's like you can only do so many of those. And, you know, I would want stouts, So I would feel like with a stout, you can definitely come up with, you know, whether it just be a standard 5% or barrel age peppers, throw in like chocolate and raspberries or something like that. As far as who would make it, I this is like what you said, Wendy, with City Belt, like they make pretty decent ass stouts. So I feel like I would start there. Yeah. Oh, I guess two for City Belt. City Belt. I want stouts. Let's rock it.
It's hard because the quote unquote versatility of IPAs doesn't necessarily exist to the extent in a lot of other styles. Stouts, yes, because you could just get different adjuncts to fill it in there, which is kind of like the same with IPAs. But like, there is no real, like, you know, after coconut and coffee, what else is there for a brown ale? Like, you're kind of like getting really far away from the brown ale. Isn't that yeah. Praline? So can we did you say prune? I mean, we tried prunes in beer once, or raisins. We tried steeping it with the raisins. Just because there's so many people that want IPAs and want the variants of IPAs, it's the reason why Sculpin exists. I had a friend who was out in Texas yesterday for work, and he was at a bar, and he's like, I have no idea what any of these beers are. And they had Grapefruit Sculpin. And I'm like, get the Sculpin, dude. I know you like IPAs. You're going to love that beer. And he did. And that's just the kind of thing that it's easy for an IPA drinker to go out and, you know, have a few different beers in a few different styles, whereas sometimes the malty guys like myself that want one of the other 50 BJCP category beers to drink. So
what about a barley wine pack?
You could pull off a barley wine, but who's creating multiple barley wines already as it is?
Bottle logic.
There you go.
They could do, let's see, they can do just a standard. There's the Dark Rituals, which they mix with their Dark November Stout. They have the Metal Witting Peach to Stone, peach barley wine that they just did. There's a few. They have a coconut barley wine that is absolutely ridiculous. So they have quite a few. So,
well, you know, there was, if you recall, back in 2017, 2016, when the brewery did the 12 Days of Christmas, and they were doing all their beers, and they aren't the same, but yeah. I just wanted to bring that up because we're going to be interviewing them here on November 18th in 2 weeks, so I will be excited to chat with them. But yeah, their 12 Days series is a barrel age series that I think a lot of people enjoy too. But again, too, like a lot of these beers with the variants, and if you look at the variants for, you know, Rye Hipster now over in Oddside, or Griffin Claw's Flying Buffalo, all these beers, like Flying Buffalo this year is going to be a 12 ounce cans. Do you know how excited I'm going to go buy and drink it?
I'm really excited about that.
I'm gonna go buy.
Oddside could totally do a seltzer pack too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oddside could do a seltzer.
Or pack if they did their what's the popsicle ones? Yeah, they could the fruitsicles.
Yeah.
The other one though, that there's like a million. Wow, why can't I think of it? There's like a million different variants of it. It is an IPA.
Also, it's not the bean flicker or the coffee bean flicker or the. I'm not that's too familiar with the IPAs over at the Dank Juice is what you're looking
dank
for.
Dank Juice. They could totally do a Dank Juice variety pack for the holidays, and I would be all over that because every time I see a new one, I grab it. But IPA.
I remember when we did the, because it's a New England IPA, we did the New England IPA March draftness. That was like not March, it was like January of a year. And I remember Wes reaching out to me saying, hey, why isn't this beer here? And I'm like, can you promise me a keg of that beer if you win? And he goes, no. And I said, well, that's why it's not there. He was like so upset. And like after I explained to him, like, because I don't remember what the he was chatting because Boss Tweed was in the competition and not M43, and he's like, well, I want this beer in. And I'm like, can you get it to me? And when he said no, I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's what we're doing, is we bought a keg. And we actually bought two kegs that day, and a huge snowstorm hit, so that sucked. Big thanks, right, though, to Brown Iron Brewhouse for hosting that party. And thanks to Travis. Travis drove from Williamston to Washington Township in a snowstorm to do meet and greets with fans who loved M43 and Boss Tweed. So my article is a little bit different. It is going to chat about the upcoming... Well, Jim Cook over at... Sam Adams had a very big conversation recently. I believe it was like a conversation with all of the, it was like a not a quarterly meeting, but like a business meeting with like investors. And there was a few things that he mentioned during this conversation, and we'll kind of go through them. But it involves around Boston Beer and everything that involved around Boston Beer. And the first thing is that he's saying that Boston Beer aims for simplicity and beer innovation and avoids bandwagon offerings. Now, this is one thing where I was trying to think, you know, did Boston Beer do a New England IPA? Did they really hop on the IPA trend like New Belgium did with Voodoo Ranger, or the variant? Speaking of variants of an IPA, Voodoo Ranger for sure. But that is one thing that I really couldn't think of, is that Sam Adams, at least distribution-wise, has been very consistent with its beers. Cold Snap, Oktoberfest, Cherry Wheat, Boston Lager. Do you think, you know, we're dealing with one of the top two craft breweries in the country, do you think that they can do it because they're one of the top two, or they could do it because the market wants them to do it? Because that's the thing, is you're playing with house money. People are going to buy Sam Adams no matter what, but do they, are they at a point where they don't need a New England IPA because they're Boston fucking beer company, or, you know, are they doing it because, you know, or is it them being arrogant, like, oh, I don't need to do that, I'm doing just fine elsewhere?
I don't think it's really them being arrogant. I mean, yeah, they've got the space, and they've got the millions of barrels that they produce every year, and hey, it's the trend. Where the trend is at, you make the beer that you think, whether or not it's going to be logistically feasible that you're going to make money off of it. And if you're going to make money off of, you know, the standard Sam Adams lager, and suddenly here comes Hazy, and it's like, hey, based on profit loss, you know, we can make some shit out of this, so let's fucking do it. I don't know, like I said, I don't see like you said, they've got enough money to do it, so why the hell not? Doesn't seem like it's you know, arrogant of them to do it.
So, did he specifically say hazy IPAs in this conversation?
All right. So let's go. So I'll read from the quote. Folks, if you're listening to the podcast, obviously all of these links will be in the show notes. So just head over to the show notes on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen. I will read a little bit from the article just to kind of give it exactly what it says. It says, Coke likened the beer industry, particularly craft beer, when he started Sam Adams, to a big open ocean with just a handful of lunatics, idiots, and misfits. But now the ocean is crowded with almost 10,000 craft breweries and everybody making a lot of the same styles and competing in the same way. Our challenge is to get out of the crowded ocean and hunt for white space and white whales, Coke said. We are like those brave whaling captains looking in a more difficult, more challenging places for new opportunities. So, no, he did not name New England IPA as a culprit, but I feel it was subtle.
Okay. Because Sam Adams did release the Wicked Hazy IPA in 2021, and they released it with a Super Bowl ad. So I mean, we can't use that particular one as an example, but I do believe that they don't necessarily follow the trends. I mean, the fact that they just released it in 2021 kind of says something about it, if that makes any sense.
Is it that they waited long enough for it to be a category in the whatchamacallits and in all the competitions?
In the competitions. Maybe. You never know. But I don't know. I toured Sam Adams, and you know, when you tour the Sam Adams facility in Boston, it's their I can't think of the word. I don't know what's wrong with me today. It's where they test things, basically. It's their testing facility. Research is what you're touring. Yes. So they had a lot of really good beers there that they don't distribute, is what we tested in the, once we did our tour, they give you a bunch of samples, and there was a lot of really good beer that they just don't distribute. So I think that they kind of stick with what's, I don't think they follow the trends. No, I think it's true.
So regarding their beer, I think they're going to stick to their guns and produce the beer that they're going to produce. I think they're going to add where there is space to add. So obviously they added their NA beers recently with the NA craze. And is the NA craze as big as the New England IPA craze? I don't believe so. But I believe it's a segment of the market that they want to make sure that they're part of, because they're part of every segment of the alcohol market. With Dogfish Head, now they have Truly, Twisted Tea. Obviously, Dogfish Head has their hard spirits. So there's a lot of places that they're going into, not just beer. And I think they see that beer is not necessarily the be-all, end-all. You're competing for shelf space, whereas the shelf space isn't moving into other breweries. It's moving into other products. It's moving into RTDs, which they're going to be launching a tequila-based seltzer. It's moving into spirits. Like, all these people are moving into different areas, which I think is going to be key for them in growing. And to follow up on this, is the other article is that they were saying that, and I got to get the exact quote for the year, but in 14 years, 14 years, so 2036, that is a hike. They're saying that their portfolio will double thanks to their Beyond Beer production. I don't know if there's enough room for them to grow that much. Obviously, they're going to be eating into wine, spirits, RTD. They're not going to be really eating into the craft beer market. But do you think that they're going to be able to keep up with the demand? Trying to make, like, are they expanding too much and making too many things that they're just going to fold because they're spread too thin? I guess is my question.
I'm like, how many times is Brewers Association going to have to keep changing the limit?
Well, I mean, they're not making that much beer right now. Their brewery capacity is not, I only think it was like 1.4, 1.5 million last year.
They're not expanding in beer. They're expanding in other markets.
Yeah. So they're not touching. And as much as beer is taxed, or excuse me, seltzer is taxed as beer, it's not considered part of the barrelage in craft beer. That is the one thing that I noticed at GABF. There was no seltzers there. It was all beer, which is fine.
I don't know if that seems like that's just a lot, because, I mean, hell, as a world population, just looking at that, like, complete macro level, we're projected to hit 8 billion in, what, 3-4 years? So you're talking 2036. We were probably looking at a world population at least at like 10 billion at that point. And if they're pushing out enough product to, you know, fulfill everybody here in the U.S. and going international. If there's people international that will drink it as much as they already drink with their own products, especially, you know, with China and Japan and whatnot. I guess if the forecasts say it, I guess, but like, I don't just feel like it's going to get to a point where things are going to start to scale back somewhere. Things are going to start to scale back just as things just ebb and flow, that we're going to get to this point where, you know, it's going to be enough, that it's like enough breweries, enough wineries, enough RTDs. And like, I guess I don't see it. I feel like 2030, we'll just start, everybody starts cutting back and we're all drinking vitamin and smart waters.
Absolutely not. I'm not doing that. And you don't get to be a business like Boston Beer Company and not know where to expand, I guess, and not have a plan to scale back if you need to, if it doesn't work out, is my opinion. So no, I don't see them folding because they've expanded they've diversified too much, but I do think that Rob is right to a point where it will get to be a point where it's all too much, but I do think they probably have a plan to back that up and to scale back if they need to.
I'm actually trying to look up right now. So in 2021, the Boston Beer Company produced 8.5 million barrels of all product. That's important to note, all product, but it wasn't 1.4, it was 1.8 million in beer. Yingling did not publish their number, but the next up is 1.1 million with Sierra Nevada, and then it drops all the way down to 528,000. So literally, it almost goes like Boston Beer, half of Boston Beer is Sierra, half of Sierra is Firestone Walker. So yeah, they're big boys, but they did 1.8 million in beer, meaning they did 6.7 million in non-beer barrelage between Twisted Tea, Truly Seltzer, all their other products, Angry Orchard. So yeah, I don't know if they're necessarily spread thin, but I don't know. I think there comes a point where they need to make sure that they're not going after too many areas and focusing on the ones that they're made. But they've also been doing this for a lot of years, and there's a reason why Jim Cook's a millionaire and I'm not.
That's true. Hey, drop them all out, and you know, if you're going to be the Kirkland signature of beverages, just have one of everything, go for it.
Yeah, but Kirkland puts their name on just random stuff that, you know, is made by other organizations.
Yeah, that's just metaphorically, just from the name's sake. I know that there's way too many manufacturers that make all the stuff that they put their labels on.
So
indeed.
Yeah, I was thinking about like Kirkland vodka, and I know how good it is, but I was trying to figure out who actually makes the Kirkland vodka, but I couldn't figure it out in one quick Google. So that is going to do it for the news segment, October 28th, 2022. My name is Ken, my co-hosts Wendy and Rob. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in 3 weeks with the brewery on 11/18. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.